Hello, everybody, and we are back once again. This is Nerd Stuff, and we are now at our episode 31. My name is Skron, and with me is my buddy here, Freak of Nature.
Hey guys, happy to be here. Great to be here again for the 31st time.
Yeah. We've had 30 episodes already. We also had a rebrand for those that have noticed. So we changed it up a little bit. So hope those I hope the interactive video snippet works well, so you can find it on our socials. So at least you'll see it there, and you'll see the topics, and of course a snippet of what to expect from that episode. And we'll be doing that from here on out, definitely. What about you, Freak? What do you think of the new branding we have?
I like it. It looks good, nice and clean. How do you make it? Do you make it in Photoshop or something?
I'm more illustrator, so I'm a bit of like a reverse arty.
Stonks. Strong power there.
But the snippet was done in After Effects. I've been learning a thing or two, trying to improve the video side. Speaking of a whole lot of improvement, is also an improvement on the Mario Kart franchise, which I never really expected this. It is the Mario Kart Live Home Circuit. So what this is basically is if have you ever seen those in game stores like Skylanders, I think what's the Disney, yeah. The Disney ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're static, right, and everything. But this one in particular, the Mario Kart Live, is a remote control actual Mario Kart. I mean, who would have thought, right?
Yeah, something pretty cool. So that came up from the 35th anniversary of Super Mario. That's where they announced that game.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
I just didn't expect it, you know. I didn't expect that we were at that stage of technology. I mean, I consider myself someone who already follows new tech regularly, and someone who's I feel a bit more up to date than normal people. But I didn't expect that we were at that phase and we can have remote control. Like through VR, augmented reality. There we go. Not VR, sorry, but AR.
AR, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people's houses are big enough to play such a game.
Okay, I see you're already at your trying to knock on the game already. So cut a few pegs, but yeah, I agree. It's definitely a novelty item. I see it's something like the Skylanders, the Disney one as well. I forgot, the name skips me right now, the Disney game that you plug into your PS4 and you know you could you put in a character and you can play it on the console. But this was a bit reverse. You actually control the Mario Kart or the cart, and then you get to see an augmented reality version of the racetrack through your Nintendo Switch, which is I think pretty cool. But the size of the track will depend on the size of your living room. So do you see this?
Can you imagine all the Filipino? Can you imagine all the Filipino people looking at their living rooms right now? How much floor space do you have, Ron?
Oh, not that big, definitely. You know what? I can get it, but I can get it like as a drag race. It's not gonna be a circuit. It's just one drag race, like one straight line as a drag race. It should be doable, right? You know, like start to finish. You cut the track.
It'll be the most boring Mario race ever. What a waste of money.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, let's talk about price point. I don't think they've revealed any price point yet. They only teased it. How much did a Mario Kart with an AR-ready camera built in on top of it would cost? I mean, of course, the toy itself, it's about the size of the Tamiya four-wheel drive?
it probably cost about $300-$400.
Yeah, with the game, right? Or would you say it with the game? Right?
I mean, the game will be a free app, but the bloody hardware will cost like.
Because you know that's even worse. Because they're gonna give you the app for free. You'll be like, oh, well, it's a free game. Then when you download it, you're required to have the cart, the physical cart to play.
No.
It's definitely a novelty.
Yep.
But I don't know. So for you, you don't think it'll catch on, this trend?
No, I mean, all those AR merchandise you have, like from Star Wars, you have the BB-8 mobile controlled BB-8, where you can use your phone as a controller and drive BB-8 around your living room. I mean, it's the same thing, right?
It's the same thing. It's just this one has real interactivity. The BB-8 was really novelty.
Yeah, this one has like some form of gamification, where if your living room is big enough, it'll create an arena or track for you, I guess. But like, it seems like it's for a bachelor or a very rich young kid. You know, when the whole family is working and you're alone at home, then you can play this. But other than that,
I don't think this is an everyone game. I mean, Mario Kart is an everyone game, right? But to be gated highly by such a big pay gate.
Yeah.
I mean, we're expecting it to be expensive. You're thinking like $300 to $400. I'm thinking as well like $250 to $300. It's my guess. But enough about that. Let's talk about something that we can actually afford and play. The Super Mario Battle Royale. What's your thoughts about it? BR is not even a new thing. It's an overdone franchise, in my opinion. Overdone genre.
Yeah, first we need to describe to our listeners what we are talking about. So the Super Mario Battle Royale. Imagine going through a Super Mario stage, except you're going through roughly the same stage with 99 other people. And when you kill monsters on your stage, that those dead monsters go to other people's stage. So that's how you're supposed to kill other players. So first, this idea sounds insane. Because like, okay, you're playing a Super Mario game, but the most important thing is not your score or anything, but rather it's just to survive and kill monsters. So are you trying to make Super Mario into a Dark Souls game? Because I don't think that's happening. Tetris Battle Royale wasn't really like, okay. Well, Tetris Battle Royale works because it's already an established genre, right? Where you go head to head, you send lines to your opponent. But freaking Super Mario, you send.
That's what I thought as well. Like,
opponent's like, screen.
Tetris Battle Royale or even Puyo Puyo. Those games, those are what I initially thought when I heard about it. That's what I was saying. It's like Battle Royale is an overdone genre, but this is a bit, would you say, a little bit fresh in terms of gameplay. It does add suspense to your game. Imagine fighting against speedrunners, right? When they're at most, what they do is they try their best to avoid fighting. And then you're there, like, slowly just killing everyone so the speedrunners will have a lot of enemies.
No, the thing is, the speedrunners will be totally out of their element because it's, you're supposed to kill monsters and stay alive, not complete the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. I think, I don't know, I'm a bit iffy on it, but I feel like there is a market for it. Although I'm not sure how big of a market a Super Mario Battle Royale would get you.
Yeah.
It's So
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm as lost as you are with the Super Mario Battle Royale. But speaking of lost things, these are lost things. So lost things that are coming back to life, freak. Dragon Age 4 confirmed. Can you believe it?
With how bad Mass Effect Andromeda was.
Yeah, I know, that's why.
He released a delay between Inquisition and Dragon Age 4. I'm just cautiously optimistic. Very cautious.
Because even I think these aren't the same writers anymore as well.
I'm not sure. I didn't quite try and
check, I'm not sure if they took back the writer, but I know the writer left already a while back. One of their lead writers, but I'm not sure if he's or if they got him back for this project or anything. But man, it's been a while. Dragon Age.
Yeah. It's been a while. Yeah.
6 years after Inquisition, and Inquisition wasn't even that highly regarded. It wasn't the best Dragon Age of the franchise.
Inquisition had its problems. It wasn't exactly a perfect game or one, like, it wasn't a flawless game, but it was okay. Like Mass Effect 3, like, it wasn't a flawless game, but it was okay in terms of gameplay. Mass Effect 3 was played for a story, not for the gameplay anyway.
Yeah, it's basically you wanted to finish it, right? So you wanted to get it over, have closure.
Yeah.
At least that's what I see people with Mass Effect 3 is like, it's for the closure.
Yeah, for sure.
So what do you think they'll do with Dragon Age 4?
Oh, I think they'll have a enemies because they can't use the same enemies over and over again.
I think they're gonna have Morgana. See, I can't even remember the lady's name.
Morrigan, oh my god.
Yeah, and she was my favorite too.
Morrigan is a good character.
Yeah,
but
that's why.
The thing is, how are you supposed to find an enemy again, right? You have the Darkspawn, which you killed all of them. And then you have the Eldritch monsters, which you killed all of them again, and you closed the portal. So wherever they go, I hope you're not fighting dragons, because I've done enough of that in Guild Wars 2.
Yeah. And we're going to have Dragon's End as well next year.
Yeah, so exactly.
More dragons. So, I don't know. I am, again, the same with you. I am cautiously optimistic about the Dragon Age 4 coming out 6 years after Inquisition. So will it be a Mass Effect Andromeda? I guess that's the biggest question. What's your opinion? Do you think it will be a Mass Effect Andromeda?
Oh man, I hope not. I hope BioWare has learned their lesson. I hope they start releasing good games again. Because you know what? They released Anthem. It was a flop, right?
Oh no,
Andromeda, it was a flop.
Don't remind me of Anthem.
Flops? The latest 3080 card.
I made a mistake on that. I don't think I've told you this. I made a mistake on that. So I bought a new card. Speaking of card, right? I bought a new 2060.
Are you serious?
No, before. No, this is like 2 years ago when it came out.
How long ago?
2 years
ago. 2 years
ago
is fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
No, but
fine.
When I bought it, I had the option of having Battlefield 5 or Anthem. And I was like, Anthem's a new game. Battlefield 5 is an old game. But I could have gotten more value from Battlefield 5. That's the lesson right there.
Probably. Yeah. Okay, I'm at BioWare's official website now. And there are two most recent releases who were Anthem and Mass Effect Andromeda. And I can tell you, both of those games were not good.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay, Andromeda had its good moments, right? A lot of Andromeda was fun, but like, I was playing Andromeda for the story, and halfway through the story was incoherent.
I don't know. I mean, I'd rather not talk about Bio anymore. I'm just depressing, especially now that I remember Anthem.
Yeah.
Anthem depresses me. You know what? Something that I'm sure that will not depress us. Baldur's Gate. I've seen enough of it. I'm confident it's not going to disappoint. It's going to come out in early access.
It's going to be at least be decent, right?
Yeah, it's going to be at least decent.
So we can play together. We can have a Nerd Stuff Baldur's Gate playthrough.
Yeah, I think we can. Definitely we can. Baldur's Gate 3, by the way, will launch for early access on September 30th. And
I don't think I'll be playing early access. I don't think I will.
Yeah, I'm not sure as well. But when you do, I'll be there to play. And I'm excited for it. I'm actually really excited for it. I don't know what else to say. It's been a while since I saw the trailer, and when I saw it, it's like, oh, this ticks all the boxes I want on a game right now. And
yeah, if you've played Divinity Original Sin 2,
yes, and I did.
The gameplay is actually quite similar, which that is the only thing I'm skeptical about and I'm wary of.
Why?
The gameplay differentiation will be at least, you know, a bit more. Because I don't want to be playing like kind of like a port of Baldur's Gate into the DOS 2 kind of gameplay or engine. I want to play a new experience. And some of the mechanics are very promising, like the summon the hand and then throw stuff at your opponent and deal damage. I like the kind of physics stuff, which DOS 2 didn't have. So it's stuff like that that makes it very promising, but the fact that it's out on early access. Now, I don't want to play on early access because I don't want to ruin the storyline for myself, obviously. But also because true. I want to enjoy the game without knowing everything about it.
True. That
I think
is true.
DOS 2, I played so much of the early access that I memorized the efficient route of the first island. And when it dropped, right, I was like over leveled and everything when I started the first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I played DOS 2 as well, like by the time I got to the final island, I was very OP that I can one shot people because I had forgot that spell. It's an illusion spell that makes you use multiple skills. It negates the requirement, the sorcerer point requirement. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it negates the use of that. Apothesis. So it negates the use of that sorcerer point. So I had like a lot of moments where I could just one-shot someone. I was one turn, basically. Then I'd make myself invisible. I don't know, I always tend to, regardless of how much I tend to change my gameplay, my endpoint always turns out to be something stealthy and magic in a combination. Like Guild Wars, Skyrim, whatever game that allows me to customize my tune or my character. I always tend to end up with something that revolves around magic and stealth.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you have like a stereotype that you sometimes end up with, or do you actually
try hard
to mix it up?
I just play the game however the most enjoyable way to play to me. Oh. I don't have a pattern, I guess. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, I think for me, I don't know how that mindset works for me, but it always ends up that way. Even like my squad in XCOM, you'll bound to find someone that can hack and you know make you reveal. So it's a pattern for me. But anyway, enough about me and enough about Baldur's Gate. Let's talk about celebrity right now, because you know this is more, it's not pressing, but it's someone very prominent in the music world, especially. It's Post Malone. So he has bought an undisclosed equity on Envy Gaming. And for those who don't know Envy Gaming owns three powerhouse teams right now, which is Team Envy, Dallas Empire, and Dallas Fuel. So Dallas Empire being their Call of Duty team, Dallas Fuel being the Overwatch or the Owl team, and Team Envy being their general esports team from varying titles. So I think this is a pretty big move. What do you think about this, Freak?
I think we just, our industry in general, just uses like celebrities to validate our existence. And
of course,
you know, from the celebrity's point of view, it's like, yeah, I'm just putting money in something that will probably earn me money, right? That will get me some money. And then I do this PR release so that, oh, I can get some good publicity, especially amongst the younger generation, Gen Z, millennial generation. So I think, yeah, it's good. Validates esports, but it's like, I don't know, it's not very exciting.
The forever cynical, or would you say skeptical, freak of nature. I mean, normally both of us are the cynical and skeptical one, but you know, without Index here to be the life of the party.
One of us has to play. This is the reality of the situation. This is the reality of the situation.
It is, and I agree. It's hard to say no. I mean, even with what we talked about previously last week with Seraphine. So yeah, it is. It's a good marketing move. You get money from the celebrity, undisclosed. You didn't even know how much, right? So we don't know how little or how big it is.
Exactly.
Could be like a big. Yep. It could be just like what 1%. Total of Envy Gaming, but that's still PR for them, right? The PR value of that is huge for Envy Gaming. So I do agree with you on that point. I do think it's sensationalized. Would you agree the right word for that?
Not really sensationalized, but it's like, don't put them on a pedestal, right? Yeah, that's about it. Like the talents inside the esports scene, you know, those are the people that should be the headliners. But now it seems like because they don't have a large following outside of the esports, they are just being set aside or being put in the background as the movers of the industry. Whereas the people with like a really have all the limelight and the fame just come in and like, oh, hey, focus on me.
I do agree with that point. And, well, it's still, I think, a big thing for our industry. It provides growth at the expense of, you know, marketing.
Yeah, confidence. Yeah. Not really. It doesn't provide growth directly. It provides confidence.
Yeah, okay,
and
there we go.
The small-time investors will all come in and give more money to the industry. And I guess that's how it will grow.
Yeah, okay, that's a good way of putting it as well.
Yep.
Speaking of with someone who is not a small-time investor, so Team Secret will be... or has teased, or has hinted, because I don't really know, because all they said was like they're teasing something. And so they showed a video. So here's the thing. They showed a video of Team Secret with the backgrounds on the colors of the Philippine flag. And it basically said in Filipino, are you ready for like a new secret? I don't know what you think about it, but I do think that they are investing in an esports team in the Philippines.
Is this along the same reasoning as Seraphine is a Filipino?
No, this one is...
I'm starting to see a trend here. I'm starting to see a trend here, Ron.
Pinoy baiting.
I don't know. It might be a bit biased. Yeah.
No, Pinoy baiting. You know, it's actually a thing now. But it's not like this is Team Secret's first foray in Southeast Asia. They have a PUBG M in both Malaysia and Thailand, and they also have a League of Legends team in Vietnam. So this isn't their first foray. So my question will be, what is a strong enough game in the Philippines that Team Secret would actually invest in? I mean,
other than TNC. I'm like, it's only TNC that's like, look, Secret wouldn't pick up a losing team, right?
That's the thing, right? People are saying Mobile Legends because Mobile Legends is really big in the Philippines. But Philippines isn't even the best Mobile Legends country. It's that would be EVOS.
Yeah. EVO sells their team to... Oh, sorry?
So, Malaysia, rather. Malaysia and Indonesia, I think, have the strongest Mobile Legends team. So, what else could they invest in? I'm not sure how strong Philippines is actually for PUBG M, but I don't think Team Secret would want a third PUBG M team. Or would they?
Definitely not. No. Maybe a Valorant team.
But that's another thing. Yeah, people are also saying Valorant, but we're not also the best Valorant in the Philippines, in the Southeast Asia. Because our best team, which is has never lost, I think, in the Philippine Valorant scene, which is Team Adroit before, which has now been acquired by Bren Esports. So they're now Bren Esports. They are not exactly the best in Southeast Asia as well. They have placed, I think, sixth in the last Pacific Open. So it's not exactly still the same, the biggest game in the Philippines that Team Secret.
You know, why can't it be that Team Secret wants to open a esports academy in Southeast Asia?
Oh, that is true. And do you think Philippines would be a prime candidate for that?
Yeah, I mean, English speaking, that's the most important. Low cost, that's the second most important. And then access to acceptable internet, that's the third most important. And then seen as kind of like an epicenter area for future Southeast Asia esports. I think all the boxes has been ticked. I think it's actually a good idea. And considering the most dominant talents in many of the esports games and titles come from Philippines, I think it's a no-brainer. If you want to open an academy, you're doing it in Philippines.
Okay, so that's your thing, it's an academy, not a team.
Yeah.
That is an interesting idea. And it ticks all the boxes, as you said, and I can roll with that. I can accept that. An esports academy by Team Secret.
Yeah.
That's really interesting to think about it. That's why I've been thinking, because we actually asked on our socials what team would Team Secret invest in. But seeing it can't be Dota 2, they already have one of the best Dota 2. But yeah, it does tick a lot of boxes. I am excited. I hope that is the case because I am from the Philippines, but I don't think we have the best team, for example, for Mobile Legends. I mean, we have a contender, but they're not exactly the best, right? Because that's the only reason I would see Team Secret actually really investing in a team. Because if they really wanted a Mobile Legends team, they could have gotten a team in Malaysia. And they already have operations in Malaysia. Why would you create a new operations team in the Philippines, right?
Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
So, yeah, I can roll with an esports academy. I accept that. I think I will go with that. So, hopefully
nice.
That's the case.
Vote of confidence.
Yeah. Hopefully that is the case. But speaking of so we talked about earlier how Vietnam, how Team Secret has a team in Vietnam, with under League of Legends team, which is part of the VCS, the Vietnam Championship Series. Granted, their team already lost in the lower bracket for Team Secret, but they're still placed high, I think, 4th to 5th. It's still a respectable placement for them for the VCS. And I think a few days ago, due to the raising concerns, and of course, the travel restrictions, VCS representatives cannot participate in the Worlds. They will be the only one so far, as of recording, that will not be allowed to play in the Worlds 2020.
I was a bit surprised because I thought Worlds 2020 was cancelled, but it seems like it's going on.
Yeah, I actually thought they would do something like OWL, wherein only selected regions that can actually play against each other on a decent ping.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, apparently they're going through with it and VCS is left out. But they're not exactly fully left out. They will still get a share of the prize pool as if they really competed. I mean, it doesn't make you feel better. It's money, but it keeps them running. But you have got the feel for these players. They're not going to be able to participate in the Worlds 2020. So I think that's a big deal. So I think the two representatives, I checked it just now because it's actually concluding on today. It is Team Flash and GAM Esports that are gonna be the representatives. Sadly, they're not gonna be able to compete, which is a bummer. Since that's also two less Southeast Asia representatives for us.
Yeah, unfortunately for Southeast Asia, I think they're always being left out. But it can't be helped, right? I mean, if you want to do a bubble, there are certain like restrictions and timings that you have to abide by. If you can't get there in time, you're just gonna get left out. That's the unfortunate truth.
Yeah, that is definitely the unfortunate truth, and I think many fans from the VCS are gonna be heavily disappointed by this move. But it can't really be helped. It's a safety concern. It's not something that Riot can do. I mean, everyone would want to continue with what they really want to put out, right? Like Worlds 2020, you have OWL, you have everyone. Everyone's trying their best to put out their own world championship, except Valve. So Valve has sit out the TI, which is, when they announced it was acceptable. People accepted it. But now that they haven't revealed anything, even after those months,
not only didn't reveal anything, they canceled everything. Do you remember they said like, be prepared for like online regionals or something, like a few months ago?
April they announced it.
They freaking tweeted it out, right? Like, oh, don't worry, they're gonna be like online regionals or something. And I'm like, okay. And then now they are saying like, oh, not everything is for the foreseeable future. It's nothing is happening. I'm like, what the hell? You just got trolled, man.
So they have, it's not even a money issue. They currently have pocketed, what was that, Freak?
They pocketed 100 million, okay, approximately from the Battle Pass sales. As of this moment, as of the moment we are speaking. So the TI prize pool has just broken 35 million. And as we all know, 25% of all Battle Pass purchases go into the prize pool. So that is an obscene amount of money that they have earned. And seeing none of it, I'm like, what the hell? Like, yeah. Not only did they cancel like the regionals which they promised us, they are not promising any further support for like existing teams. You know, everyone has got to eat, and the Dota 2 circuit being so laissez-faire and being so uncertain is not good for anyone, especially during the COVID-19 crisis.
Yeah, it's not good for organizations. Wherein, you know, because of this, like, one of our beloved teams here in Southeast Asia has shut down. I know it's very close to your heart. It's very close to your home. So we're talking about Reality Rift. It's actually on your turf. So they have decided to let go of their Dota 2 team roster due to, well, partly because of the lack of tier 2 support from Valve.
Yeah. So they obviously had a plan to activate the team, you know, in a way of like promoting their brand as well as like getting sponsorships and so on and so forth. But the thing is, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the team can no longer travel and activate. You know, for Dota 2 teams, it's very simple. The only way you can activate your fans and monetize them is that either you have like a very well developed merchandising, or you go to events and like you hand out like perks, like signings and so on and so forth. And the event basically pays you for doing all this like extra stuff, and you get like giant prize pools from the event as well. So I don't know. It's just the reason they shut down is not only because of the pandemic. It's also a host of other factors, especially the uncertainty, because it does take a lot of money to fund a team, and yes, if you don't have any winnings to show for it or any potential sponsorships or activations, then you're just gonna lose money until there's just no end to this black hole you're throwing money into, basically.
Yeah, you don't know when you can actually go back out there again, because there's no help from Valve. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And now
you don't
have
the structure.
Yeah, that's why the whole community right now is in chaos for Dota 2. Everyone,
You know why they dropped the lineup? Also because how a team works normally is that you sign players into a long-term contract, 6 months, 3 months. And I can tell you for certain that this time is where teams start to renegotiate their contracts, because this is would be post TI time.
Yeah.
So it's the perfect timing. And that's why Reality Rift was dissolved. Not because, you know, the owner was like, oh, I'm losing too much money. It's because the contract just ran out. They saw no reason to continue.
Yeah.
That's probably what happened.
And it's probably going to happen with multiple teams. Multiple tier 2 to tier 3
tier 2, tier 3 teams, yeah. The tier 1 teams are fine because they have, like, as I said, their merchandising, their sponsorships.
And okay, they're
even
at that
their
level
brand
already.
Yeah, they're at that brand level already. And they have people like Post Malone to build them out.
There you go. So yeah, those things, you have those things that could benefit you. And it's not just even the organizations that are at this May right now. Even the talents, even the streamers, even the content creators are all fighting each other and basically saying, why are you blaming me? Blame Valve. I'm talking about the renewed, it's not recent, but a renewed argument, debate. What would you call it?
I think it's like an interest, right, in the topic.
Okay.
How is our scene sustaining itself?
Yeah.
So one of the big ways the scene sustains is that you have all these third-party tournaments, and actually you have a lot of third-party tournaments over the entire season of Dota, and all these third-party tournaments maintain the interest of the viewers. You know, the people who go to stadium and buy the tickets, etc. And they all build up a storyline to TI, right? All these events over the year. Because if you didn't have all these third-party organizers, the only event you have is the majors and the TI, which is like basically maximum of 6 competitions, and even the majors are taken up by third parties and hosted by third parties. And as I can tell you for sure, Valve isn't footing the bill for these majors. The third party organizers are. Valve, all Valve does is foot the prize money.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, if you are new to the esports space, basically, if you have put on a $2 million prize pool tournament, you are spending $2 million to make the spectacle of that $2 million tournament yourself. So the investment is by the third-party organizer is huge. And one of the ways they monetize this investment is through selling content rights. And you can't do that if your content is not exclusive, which is the big problem, right? Dota 2 content, as long as it's on the Dota TV, which all league tournaments and all are on, as long as it's on Dota TV, it's free for all. And right now, streamers are restreaming tournament content because obviously when there's a tournament going on, there's a lot of interest. But the thing is, once you dilute the tournament viewing numbers, it creates a big problem for third-party organizers because, for number one, they can't say that they have exclusive content. They can't promise the sponsors, you know, all these. They're getting all the views. They're maximizing their views. And they can't even sell the broadcasting rights because the content is not exclusive. And no one will buy non-exclusive content.
Well, those are the biggest things. I think for the longest time, that's been a problem. Valve has come in before to clarify those things. I think with ESL and a bunch of other
organizations. ESL and Facebook.
EGL, they've been DMCA. They've been putting DMCA strike for streamers. And basically the streamers cried foul. And so Valve said that, you know, they're okay, they're good. As long as they don't... So the rules were, as long as you don't use the caster that is being used
Twitch stream.
As long as you don't use the casters that are available in Dota TV and not restream their voices. And also the observer camera is under the property of the tournament organizer. So if you're going to restream, basically you have to be your own observer and your own caster. That was the deal. That was basically that is the current standing deal between organizers and content creators that would want to stream. And we've operated on that part before, like on the early days of CEsport, we've done the same. We've kept it through. We had our own casters. We had our own observer. We've streamed tournaments that were otherwise not available before on some language or in some languages or not available on English yet at that point, because before there weren't that many big games. The production wasn't that big, and basically you have to choose one game or the other to broadcast. And sometimes there are games that get left out, right? So those things. But right now it's a different ball game. And there's really big time content creators. What they've been doing is they've been streaming. They're doing their own camera. They're doing their own casting for it. So basically, it's not even casting. They're just having fun. So basically, it's like a React video from what I noticed watching it. Like I see it more as a React video, but nonetheless, because of how big these streamers are, they still do get a big chunk of numbers. So the argument there is, so on one hand, on one camp, you have the streamers or the viewers actually defending the streamers, the fans, saying that we wouldn't watch the official broadcast anyway because we're watching this streamer personally because we like them, regardless of whether they stream Dota 2 and make fun of the players and their plays. We will be there to watch them regardless.
Yeah.
And then on the one camp, on the other side, there's actually just, I think, one person who's very vocal about it. He's been saying that, you know, it's taking off, like, the growth of the scene and everything. It's been really big feud. So I guess I want to point out, like, one of the biggest feud right now is Kyle and Sing Sing. So what happened was Kyle was saying that Sing Sing was streaming. It's basically, I think it's because of how Sing Sing was tweeted it as something free content. And I think Kyle got pissed, had knee-jerk reaction, and basically called him out. Then afterwards laid out a, I think that's a very classic Kyle thing to do. He gets a lot of knee-jerk reaction comment.
Yeah.
On something, yeah, then afterwards he does the whole,
he does,
okay,
a medium,
I will explain,
post.
Yeah, I'll do a medium post, I'll expand on it, basically. That's normally what he does, you know, because of how he does it, you know, it creates controversy and everything, and it creates drama, it creates people feud, because basically he reacted not violently, but he reacted, his knee-jerk reaction was very against
his reaction.
Yeah.
Right. And then he did a follow-up Medium post, like, yeah, a master politician. He really is really good at marketing himself, man. If you think about it, right?
I'm not saying it's bad, but it is his pattern for a while now. And I think it's a good marketing stint for him. He gets the engagement, right? Twice, actually. He gets the engagement twice.
Yeah, and he multiplies it by basically addressing a community concern.
And some people find it off-putting. Some people who notice it for what it is find it off-putting. And
I think it's great that he gives voice to a very important issue. But,
yes, I do think so too.
He's very confrontational, and that's not necessarily the best way to approach
it. Yeah,
the
method, right?
Like, you can just, it's a spectacle, right? Once you say it on a broadcast, you are putting yourself out there. You're using the Omega League as a platform to speak about this issue. Some people don't want to talk about it. Think about issues, you know, when they're watching their Dota 2 entertainment. They just want to enjoy their entertainment, and maybe they were feeling in time, that's why they had the opportunity to use Omega League as a platform. And WePlay has been known to be very laissez-faire about this.
I think that my whole in the argument of Kyle is, so he was like, he was praising Bulldog for stopping, not streaming it, and I was like, but Bulldog is an Alliance streamer.
Yeah,
he is,
his
required.
Team is,
yeah, his team is playing, and also they have a
he's
stake
required
in
to
that
play
tournament
by the rules.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's
required to play
it's basically
by the
like
rules.
Gorp, right?
But they let go Gorp.
Yeah, but basically
because
the same,
OG knows
that they
OG
can't
knows
win.
That there's a huge conflict.
Yeah. So that's why. Yeah. So see, I mean, that's what a big hole in the argument of Kyle. Like, basically, see, Bulldog stopped. Yeah, because Bulldog is part of Alliance. So he has to stop.
He has a vested interest not to do it.
Yeah.
But you can learn, right, that if it was TI that is going on right now, Bulldog would be restreaming it for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So are you implying he won't be able to go to TI again?
I mean, he's cursed. He's cursed, man. I'm not implying, I'm saying it. He's why there's COVID-19 right now. He caused the pandemic to happen.
Okay.
The forces of fate were so strong, right, that he caused the pandemic to happen.
Yeah, that's where we are right now in Dota 2 of things. That was actually a pretty lengthy talk. Or Dota 2. I think it's because we're also invested on it. It's one of the games that we grew up in. It's one of the games why we're in esports in general, right?
And dear listener, if you're listening for a solution, there is no very clean solution. Right. Phew. One of the solutions which Riot Games is currently doing is that they control the entire entertainment scene. Any esports broadcaster, etc., has to go through Riot because they're the IP owner of the game League of Legends. Whereas for Dota 2, Valve has opted to let everyone use the Dota 2 license and content as they wish, as long as they don't step on each other's toes, but it's a free market.
Yeah, and the pros and cons shows, right?
To answer a lot of Carl's concerns, what Valve has to do is basically start enforcing regulations on how Dota 2 TV content, Dota 2 content is being used, monetized, and consumed. And if they do it too draconian and do it, too much to the Riot Games side, basically the entire tier, third-party organizer scene will just be wiped out. Even the small-time organizers won't be able to create tournaments.
Yeah.
And broadcast them.
Do you think ticket prices should come back? I've seen that argument used a lot. They're used
They should open Battle Pass to all organizers again. Just to allow them to monetize.
Yeah. And also, basically sell tickets through Dota TV again, right?
The thing about tickets on Dota TV is a bit meaningless because that's not how tournaments function, right? Tournaments function by streaming to a platform.
Yeah.
They don't use the Dota TV kind of like app or Dota TV platform to... So they probably weren't seeing much sales, which is why they removed the feature. But for sure, the Battle Pass is a huge kind of like bargaining chip. And you saw how well Midas Mode monetized because they had their own Battle Pass effectively by map. So they need to have this functionality in Dota 2 itself for organizers. And then I think that will be the best way to let these third-party organizers monetize again.
Yeah. Well... Again, if you are here, for the listeners who are here, if you're waiting for us to give you a magic solution to this problem that the scene has been facing for, 2 years, 3 years
now?
Yeah,
there are multiple solutions, right?
Yeah.
Valve can open Battle Pass again, they can regulate. But the thing is,
they're not
Valve
doing
has
anything.
To act. They have to act, yeah, they're not doing anything. Exactly. And that's the problem.
They're sitting on their...
100
on top
million.
Of gold. Yeah, on top. They're sitting on their golden crown right now. We'll see in a few weeks, maybe Valve will actually do something. Maybe we'll get back to it. And it's
we have to give them the benefit of the doubt.
And it's actually supposed to be after TI already this time, right? If we went all according to schedule, it should be after TI already.
Yeah, TI has ended. Yeah.
So those are really big things.
You're taking a toll.
Next up on Valve's case is CSGO coaches have been banned by ESL for abusing a spectator bug.
Coaching bug, actually.
Yeah, okay. Coaching bug. And I think it's already been fixed. Hotfix was released a few days ago. So Valve was like, oh shit, we forgot about that. Here. Let's give it a fix. So
we forgot to fix it.
But it's been damage has been done, right? Good thing on hats off to ESL. They managed to actually find it because of how far away this is. Because these games are pretty far away. And imagine the other tournaments that could have been exploited this. Because for example, they banned Hard Legion's Mechano Gun, which they caught him doing the abuse at ESL-1 Road to Rio. That is, I think, 4 months ago already. 3 to 4 months ago, if I'm not mistaken.
And there was a lot of high-profile bands, right?
Yeah, and the next one is Heroic's Hunden. At DreamHack Masters, which happened last, I think, April. Those are big things, right? Those are big things that have happened already. Imagine the other tournaments that already happened and they weren't as diligent as checking this abuse. Okay, for the final one is a big team. Actually, it's MIBR's Dead. The same event, ESL-1 Road to Rio.
They have to ban all these players for life. Like,
they're coaches.
The coaches, sorry. there was a player called Jumpy who sold his account to his friend when he was a teen, right? And he was banned for life, okay, from CSGO. It's a guy that sold his account was banned for life, and all these coaches are getting banned for only 2 months, 6 months, less than six months.
Yeah, 6, 12, or 24.
Disgusting. They should all be banned for life.
It should be for life, honestly.
Yeah, they should all be banned for life. Like,
so here's the sanction, right? I'll read the full sanction that they verdict rather that they implemented on the side of ESL. So Dead will receive a 6-month ban from playing or coaching in competition, 12 months for Hunden, 24 months for Mecano Gun, and then the teams that they represent will retroactively be disqualified from the tournament in question. So if they qualified from Road to Rio, then they're out. And then the teams will also forfeit their ESL Pro Tour points from the tournament in question. At the same time, any, if not all, prize money that is still withstanding from ESL. So those things. Yeah. But the bans are really light. It should be lifetime, honestly.
It should be lifetime bans. All these coaches, they don't deserve careers in esports anymore. Like, if they cheat once, they'll do it again.
Yes. They managed to find a loophole. They exploited it. Right, they didn't bother reporting it. They exploited it. So
they exploited it for months and months. Right, the report said they abused it for like 3 to 4 months over several tournaments. I'm like, just ban them for life, please. My God.
But you know who is banned possibly for life?
Who?
PUBGM. Along with 117 other Chinese apps. They are now banned from India.
What kind of a move do you think this is, honestly?
The tension has been increasingly getting bigger between their border. I mean, that's the only thing I can think about. It's a bit of like a national security, a quote-unquote national security implementation by India. So yeah, they're banned. They do still have the regular PUBG, which is on PC. But you know, India is also a mobile-first country in terms of gaming.
Yeah.
For those wondering why PUBG, the desktop, is not banned, well, PUBG M is banned. It's because Tencent has the rights for PUBG M. And they are considered a Chinese app. And so with that, they are banned along with 117 other Chinese apps, which is unfortunate for PUBG M, unfortunate for teams that have invested in India, especially like big teams like TSM and Fnatic. They all have PUBG mobile teams in India just because of how big it is. So can you imagine the scale of this, freak? What the arguably the biggest game in India getting banned, and you already have like foreign investors that already put in money.
Is it really one of the biggest games
in India? Yes, PUBG M.
One of
the biggest games.
I didn't know that, but this is when politics leaks into gaming, and you know, people play games to avoid the realities of life, and one of these realities is politics. So it's, I don't know, it's just like just a bargaining chip to India and China. It's just unfortunate that the people are on the receiving end.
Yeah,
but you know what, there's COD M. So
true, there's
why
COD
not
M.
Play that instead.
I mean, at some, there's also Free Fire. I'm not sure who owns Free Fire, but that's also a thing.
Oh yeah. Why not play Free Fire instead?
Yeah, Free Fire, those things. But again, you already have teams like TSM, Fnatic. They're international organizations that have invested time, branding, money, operations, team houses, boot camps, coaches, and everything, managers, just so that they could be part of the PUBG mobile scene of India. And that's all gone. Imagine that.
Yep.
I don't think it's going to be lifted anytime soon, since it's been, I don't know how law works in India. If they can actually take out a law, how fast they can backtrack from a law. But I don't think it's going to be that fast, since it's already been enacted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are on our last topic here, Freak. So I want you to open it up. It's a big of a topic. We're both excited for it. We were chatting about it a few days ago when it was released.
Hell yeah.
I don't see much enthusiasm.
How many years ago was the 2080 release? 2 years ago?
2 years, the 2000 series. 2 years ago, I think. This is the Turing architecture.
Can you imagine waiting 2 years for the next series of graphics? I seriously thought, right, that the 2020 series, the RTX 20 series, were released last year. But it's 2018. September 20. I was like, oh wow, I didn't realize that it was so long ago. And like, oh, 2 years?
Yeah.
And,
I think it's because the prices have never really dropped apart when they announced Super.
Yeah, unfortunately. And this, even though this generation is brand new, the prices are the same, unfortunately. But fortunately, performance is vastly superior, right?
Yes.
So if you're living under a rock, NVIDIA just announced like 2 days ago their new RTX 3000 series. So there's a 3080, 3070, and the brand new 3090, which is their Titan equivalent. And all of these cards are vastly superior to the 20 series, as you would expect.
It definitely is. Even 3070, according to their presentation, 3070 will be better than the 2080 Ti, at least marginally. And the 3080 at launch, which is actually very... You know what surprises me the most is the launch date.
September 17th?
September 17th for 3080 and October for 3090. So that is very, very close. It's about...
They want you to buy the 3080.
The 3080, right? That's really, really close. September 17th. Imagine that. September 17, we will have a new card. Well, I won't have a new card, but it will be unveiled to the world.
It will be on the market.
It will be on the market.
But honestly, for your market, right? The MSRP is often 1,000 plus for the 80 series, isn't it?
Yes. It's like, but 900. So there's like a markup of $150.
Yeah, it's like so stupid. Why can't you just release it for MSRP? Because in USD, 700 is about like a bit under 900, but it's always like 1,000 something. It's like, oh, can you stop?
Yeah, there's always a markup, right? And to think that we're actually pretty near to the suppliers. For example, if you buy a, let's say, what brand is there that's pretty near MSI is like Taiwan.
Gigabyte.
Taiwan, so they're pretty near supposedly where Southeast Asia, but we get these markups, so
insane, like 1.1k, 1.2k. I'm like, it's supposed to be like 960, 980 at most, come on.
So apart from our regional gripes on the MSRP, the performance does reflect, according to paper, or at least in the presentation, it is a big leap. So 3080, I believe 3070 is 6 gigs of G6, I think. I forgot their term for it. But for...
6 gigs.
For... 3080 will be 10 gig, and the big unit right here, the 3090, which will be 24 gigs, sitting at 1,500 USD MSRP. And I just saw the image earlier. It has 3 8 pins.
Yeah, for the power.
Yeah.
So it's probably like 600 watt or more kind of card.
Yeah, insane. Like minimum. Like that is a minimum right there, 600.
Yeah.
Probably 600, 700 minimum.
If you're not a system builder, by the way, an average wattage PSU for a computer would be 500 watts. So the 3090 itself needs an entire computer's worth and more worth of power supply just to run the card. So it's incredibly insane.
What's even funnier right now is there, at least for our secondhand market, there's so many people selling their 1070s, their lower end cards, and you'll yeah. see a lot of like people. It's not no one will buy it, especially that you know that the 3070, 3080 is just around the corner with this much performance boost. Imagine what a 3060 would be. So that would be sitting at a 2070 super spec.
I think people will just be looking at the compatibility because the motherboard, there is a limit. And it needs to be able to accept the card in order to use the card effectively. So for example, if your motherboard is too old, you'll be able to use the card. So for me, I had a very, very old Phenom system. I think I had it for 8 years, and when I tried to upgrade the graphics card to a 1060, I actually had to change the entire motherboard and get a new system because the OpenGL 4 wasn't supported on my old motherboard. So you run into all these compatibility issues when you want to upgrade your card. And if it's a top of the line, cutting edge technology card, I don't know how backwards compatible it will be, especially if it's a GDDR6 memory. So yeah, it's always about compatibility. And for all those older system builders who might have like 2-3 old systems, they might be benefiting from the cheaper secondhand 2080 Ti's instead of the launch of the 3080 or 3070.
Yeah, because 2080 Ti isn't even that bad card. It's a really, really good card.
Yeah, really so fast.
People are making it out like it's a bad card just because of the upcoming releases, right? And another thing is, people are already talking about 3080 and 3090. There's a lot of things that you have to factor in. You talk about the motherboard. I would like to talk about, of course, is your monitor as well that you will be using. So if you'll be using like a single 1080p 60Hz monitor, then I'd rather you stay away from 3070, 3080, and 3090 and just straight up upgrade your monitor first. Even a 144Hz single monitor will barely scratch the itch of a 3070, barely. So we're talking, these monitors, we're talking about at least 240Hz or 4K to be able to use them as much. Because guaranteed, no game right now can maximize any of these cards. Unless you have like a gajillion mods on your Skyrim. It's not going to be taken advantage of unless you have something over the long lines of a 4K. Because 3090, they're already touting it as something that can handle 8K.
Yeah.
So these are definitely something that you have to think of as a consumer. Because don't just be blinded like, oh, it's a graphics card, the best, the newest, and I have to get it without upgrading the other components that can actually complement the graphics card that you will be getting.
Yep, and it looks like they are suggesting a 750 power supply for the 3080.
And there you go.
My power supply is only 500, so I'll upgrade my power supply.
Mine is, I think, 600. Mine is 600 because I only have like a 2060. And that's already more than enough for a 2060. So there you go, you have 750 to be able to run a 3090 properly.
Yeah, even the 3080 needs you to have the 2x PCIe 8 pin power connector. So I don't know, it might be just it. might not be worth it.
Yeah, because you're going to be upgrading a lot of your opponents as well. So it's not going to be just a one-time thing that, okay, I'm going to be spending $700 on a 3080. At that point, you're going to be ending up like, oh, okay, I'm actually bottlenecking my monitor, bottlenecking this. So you'd have to upgrade those components to actually use your 3080 to its fullest.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah,
DDR6. I'm just looking at the memory. I'm just wondering what kind of PCIe slot that it needs.
Definitely among the newest architecture. I think that's about all of it from what I know. Last thoughts on the Ampere architecture? Will you be getting it?
Probably depending on the price. Because I'm running a 1060 right now, and I've only had it for what, one and a half years. So I got it pretty early on, because it's only been 2 years, right, where the 1060 has been released. So I got it like about 6 months into the release. It's good so far, and I'm not sure whether it's the graphics cards that's bottlenecking my games, or probably it's my power supply, because the power supply is only a 500. So I probably need to get a 750
or even get an 800. Before you even go for a 3080, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah, those are things.
You want to have more allowance for your power supply.
And not that I'm against people upgrading, but if you are on a tight budget, or for example, you don't have basically all the money in the world, right, to spend, I would always be cautious on buying on the initial release, because you wouldn't really know. It's a new architecture, one thing. You won't really know if there's going to be heat issues on it, especially with the amount of power it needs. Because remember the first Bulldozer from AMD? It was high clock rate, right? But it had insane heat issues.
Yeah, I think another issue is that your software isn't optimized for the new hardware. So you're probably, if you're an early adopter, you're probably going to be like tanking a lot of the badly optimized software.
Then I suggest you wait a little bit for reviews, benchmark, before you jump the gun on these new Ampere architecture cards.
Yeah, and always check the power supply requirement. I'm looking at the 3080, it requires you to have a 750 watt, and even the 3070 is not very forgiving on the wattage. So, yep.
Yeah, so if I'm even
wouldn't recommend one, upgrading in a hurry.
I would have to upgrade my power supply too. Yeah, I think that's it for us. Those are our last advice. Frick, do you have anything else to plug?
Not really. It's just that I hope that Dragon Age 4 is fun.
Oh, we're back at that. I am excited for Baldur's Gate 3. So that's something for me to look forward to. So for us, from us here in Nerd Stuff, stay safe, practice social distancing, and eat healthy, I guess. Just stay healthy. Though health is very important right now, above all else.
Yeah, keep exercising.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can't advise that, because I can't practice what I preach. So.
Oh.
So,
just run in the spot at home.
Yeah, eat healthy is my thing. Eat healthy.
Yep.
This has been Scrawn, and with me here is Freak. So, Freak.
Hey. Yep.
We will see you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye, guys. Thanks for watching. Listening.